I'm here in the town hall in Tala, and I'm talking to Eamon Cunningham. Eamon, not originally from anywhere near here.
Originally over in
Clonfert and Maynooth.
Well, that's where I am residing now. I'm originally from near Athlone in County Westmeath.
Oh, were you that far over?
Absolutely, yes. I came up to Dublin in the 31st of January 1966. I started working in Dublin County Council.
What's your background, Eamon? What was your father doing?
My father was a farmer. I came from farming community. We had a small farm around about 40 acres or thereabouts down outside Athlone. So there was four of us in the family. So there was, and I was the eldest son. I have an older sister. And in them days, farming, you know, it wasn't giving a good living to everybody, but due respects to my father and mother, to give us the best. Best of education and things like that.
Yeah, it was the early 50s and things
absolutely
were bad. You
absolutely,
know.
Yeah, things were very bad compared to what I do now and what I tell my own family and I'll tell my grandchildren at times. You know, times were hard. In relation to what is there now, my mother...
Hard in what way now?
Well, my mother... I remember going into Athlone to sell butter. We used to have cows and my mother made her own butter and went into the market in Athlone on a Saturday to sell butter. And that was crucial, 2 shillings for a pound of butter or something like that. And that brought the groceries, you know, for a part of the week. When the grocery man came around once a week, my mother would have a couple of dozen of eggs and that part paid for the groceries as well. The stock you had, you sold 5 or 6 animals a year. You sold, we'd have about 7 or 8 sheep or something like that, you know, lambs, and you sold them. And that was the type of turnover you had. Everything was handmade, bought, you know, and hand-me-downs, with due respects. We had to live with those, you know, from older cousins and things like that. The box would come every once a month or once every couple of months from an aunt we had up in Mullingar who had family that were older than us, you know, and things were handed down and you appreciated them. Cars, we had a car. I remember the first car we had was an old baby Ford. Suppose the registration was BI2669. And before that, I went to mass with my grandfather in an Assen trap. So then I remember as well. I remember my grandfather bringing me a walk with the big estate beside us and bringing me for walks through the orchards and things like that. When I say big estate, there was a couple of 100 acres in it.
And what estate was it? Do you know?
Dorrington Estate.
Dorrington's,
Mourne's Estate, Dorrington. Mm. That's right. They're still there. So they are when I go down. I know them. But it's all reclaimed now. Every field there had its own name in the field. There was the cow field. There was the shepherd's field. There was the crossroads field. The cow's field number 2. Every field had a name on it. My grandfather worked there when he was young, so he did. That's where he earned his living because we didn't have land at the time. The farm we had was a land commission farm that was divided way back in the 1930s or something like that. So it was. And as I said, times are hard. You appreciated everything you had. I cycled 7 miles to school, rain, hail or snow. So I did to secondary school, national school. I walked about 3/4 of a mile up to the national school, and you brought your 2 sods of turf or your 3 sods of turf in the winter time. So you did, to make sure that there was heat.
And you said the land commission gave land. It was 29 acres usually, wasn't it? Or it was around about, no, it was 11 acres, wasn't it?
Something like that, yes.
Well, and it was added on to what he already had.
It's added on to what already he had. And the farm was in 3 places. The farm wasn't all together. Some of it was 3 miles away. You know, so you had to go herding.
But how did they manage to get you into second level education then?
I won a scholarship into second level.
Oh, and so you were one of the lucky ones?
I was one of the lucky ones. Otherwise, I'd have gone to the technical school in Athlone, which was free.
And your life would have gone on.
I would have gone a different direction. Yes, that's right. Yeah. I won a scholarship into Athlone, the Marsh Brothers in Athlone. That's where I got my education. I think I got part scholarship up to St. Finian's in Mullingar. But I went to Athlone because when you come home, at least you had your homework to do, but you didn't. You have a lot of other work to do, you know. Cows to be brought home, calves to be fed, chickens, hens, all like that to be put in. You know, the pig was there and killed once a year. That's how we got that type of meat, you know. and the pig. When it was, the bacon was cured, it was hanging up on the out of the ceiling, so it was, you know, and bacon and cabbage and turnips. That was the staple diet.
You were lucky, really, that you did manage to escape. I suppose it was escape in,
well,
in a sense.
Well, when you look back, you can say escape, yes. I was fortunate to get an education, a secondary school education, because when it stood to me then, when the South Dublin, when the Dublin County Council, as it was then, that's where I joined, when they advertised this panel, you had to have an honours leaving cert. And I had an honours leaving cert. I had English and maths were my two strong subjects, and I got 60% in history. Don't know how I got it, but for the grace of God, I got it anyway, and that gave me my honours leaving cert. And then I was 46th in the panel for Dublin County Council. And I was called just before Christmas in 1965. I was working, previous to that, I was working with the local Moat Livestock Sales Limited, sales yard, as cattle sales every Monday. And I was a clerk in there. So I was...
And in a way, that gave you a little bit of a background in administration.
In administration, yeah. That's too true, so yes. That's right.
It gave you the... Yeah. A little bit of experience.
Well, I wasn't green when I was coming up to Dublin. Although I was green, I was only in Dublin twice or three times before then. I came up to Westmead. We were in a minor football semi-final and final. Must be 1964. So it was. And I came up to Dash. And then I was done a school tour up to Dublin as well. Otherwise, to Dash. The limit of my travels was Mullingar once a year on my holidays.
And hitting the bright lights for the first
time—absolutely, absolutely daunting. So it is. Yeah, I hadn't a clue about Dublin. My sister was working in Dublin. She arranged for me to stay in a house in Cabra Park in Phibsborough, beside Phibsborough Church. And to get from Phibsborough Church to Parnell Square, I hadn't a clue in the world. I started out. I came up on a Saturday, got the train up. And somebody met me and parked me out there. My sister was at home. She was doing a line with somebody from home, a neighbour. And after Mass on Sunday morning, I started out looking for Parnell Square. And I remember, well, I walked down the North Circular Road. I walked down Gardiner Street. And I came in from Gardiner Street in Parnell Street into Parnell Square. And I realised I was after doing a half circle, because I kept going right, you know, to get to Parnell Square. So I realised then that, you know, so the 14 bus was passing by Phibsborough Church, and you were able to go up Berkeley Road at the time, you know, on North Frederick Street. So I got the 14 bus home, and I watched how it was going. And that's too true. That's exactly it. Yes, that's how green, you know, people were from the country, you know, in travel at that time. And then on the 31st of January 66, I started with Dublin County Council. And the first person I met was the senior staff officer, John Jennings, man is still alive. And we just went down to my application form. And then he said, I'm signing you up to the accounts department. And that's where I spent my first 9 years and 11 months. So I did, in the accounts department of Dublin County Council. I was not bragging, but I was a wizard at figures. And I remember figures, and I was able to do everything. Malachy Curry got me good to him. I was with him. We done wages and accounts, first of all. But then I got into the deeper aspects of the accounts, the abstract of accounts, the estimates, you know, and go to the council meetings and all like that.
Now, this was interesting, because you were there... What year?
1966. Yeah.
Now that's a very important time you came in, because you know, change hadn't really started yet.
No.
But it was
about
to start.
1970.
Yeah.
The reorganization structures changed in the council. Before then, you had a clerical officer, you had a staff officer, you had a senior staff officer, and you had the manager. There were the four grades that was there, and to break from clerical officer into staff officer was like jumping from Ireland to England. You just couldn't make that break. And promotions were very few. It was only probably maybe one a year or something like that, you know, that got up. And people were clerical officers. You know, people retired as clerical officers in them days. without getting any promotion. And there would be people stuck, wrong to say stuck, they were doing work that was assigned to them, they know it, they were there writing books, and one would hear about afterwards, somebody came in and he sat down and he opened up his ledger and he wrote all day and he closed the ledger that evening and he went home, came in the next morning, repetitive the whole way, you know, and you daren't lift your head. I didn't go to the toilet for 6 months during work, so I didn't. You daren't lift your head, you've done all your business.
Oh, was that, did you find that extremely boring? Was that boring?
No, when you didn't know better, you know, you were content. I was content with me a lot. I was learning a lot. I must say, the staff officer at the time, Tom Kennedy, got me good to him. You know, he took an interest in me. So he did. And in fact, he encouraged me to go off and do accounting. So I did, but I'd done the first year of it, and then the bright lights and my good lady wife. I met my good lady wife at the time, and that took over. So I did, and so that.
And what's your wife's name?
My wife's name is Carmel. She's Carmel Pepper. Then.
Here in Dublin.
No, I met her in Dublin. Yes, but she's a Clare person.
Oh yes.
Yeah, she's from Feakle in Clare.
When you met Carmel, you were only just in the council at that stage.
I was a year in the council.
But you had a permanent job.
I had a permanent job, that's right, yes. And she was working in the corporation.
As well.
At the time, yes, that's right, yeah. And we met at a dance in the Town and Country Club, bottom of Parnell Square.
All the changes that took place in Dublin now, because you were in the heart of Dublin.
Yes.
What were the changes that were going on that you found?
Well, In them days, in the general Dublin area at the time, there was no traffic. I could drive from Dublin to Athlone in 55 minutes. There was no speed limits, there was nothing at all. Once you go out beyond Infirmary Road, you saw nothing else. And as I said, I've driven from Dublin to Athlone, as I said, 55 minutes. You could go home when we got married in 1971. I was living in Leixlip, and I could go home to Leixlip for my dinner and come back into Parnell Square and park in the same spot. So I could, you know, out to my dinner, it was 12 miles out, you know, 15 minutes out, you know, 15 minutes back, and you had an hour and a quarter, but it must mean you were 30 minutes, you were nearly 3/4 of an hour at home for your dinner.
Well, it's interesting with all that interest you have because you wound up, didn't you, as a director of services in on the roads?
Well, no, not director of services, but I was senior staff. I was a senior executive officer in the roads department. The director of services is Frank Coffey, but I was next to him in the roads department. So, through my earlier experiences, I was able to gauge. Not gauge is the wrong word, assess and what I thought was good, and that's what I brought when I came to the roads department after reorg and after the planning and all that business, you know, that one had to be practical.
Before we get to the roads department, tell me all the stages you went through.
Yeah.
What happened?
I went through accounts, as I said, I left accounts in 1976. 1st of January, I asked for a transfer. I'd been there for almost 10 years. I knew it all. I'd gone through the abstract, I'd gone through the estimates, I'd gone through the council meetings with all about money and things like that. And I became sort of institutionalized with money, that everything was controlled by money. And I was able to, I was doing all the controls of expenditure and things like that. And I'd be telling people, you can't buy this and you can't buy that. But there was another life out there. So I got a transfer.
For the County of Dublin.
County of Dublin, that's right, yeah. Yes.
And in the
full budget.
Yeah. Full budget indeed.
Full budget for Dublin County Council.
Yeah, and you were handling all that. And you were the one that they had that made the decisions and what was spent where and what was...
Made the decision might be the wrong word.
You wrote down what you felt was the right thing.
Absolutely.
And then the manager...
I created the problem that I had to go elsewhere to spend it.
Yeah.
You know, to get
is that
money.
The way you did
that's,
it? Yeah.
That's the way I did, yes. That's right, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't give
you
approval.
Would you do
approval.
That very often? Would you have done that?
When you would see expenditure overrunning what was allocated for it.
Yeah.
That was my job, and I would highlight that, you know. And if somebody rang up and said, I wanted a code, that was the control. I have to do potholes someplace else, and I want a code for that work. You know, I said, no, you can't get it. You know, and then there'd be a row. Of course there'd be a row, you know. But it had to go elsewhere. You know, I was only the clerical officer, and I was holding on, or the assistant staff officer was then, because the grades changed in the 70s. 1970 or thereabouts, it was when the clerical officer, we had became assistant staff officer, staff officer, and things like that. So a few more grades came in from to the structure at that time.
Yeah.
So it did. So,
but a lot of the responsibility was with you in the early days.
That's right, Jess. Yeah. That's right, yeah. So I was trusted with that, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
However, you created a difficulty, is the wrong word, but you put on a break that somebody else had to know about it before that break was released. And the boss come along to me or something like that. And I remember one day I was called down to the manager. You know, what's going on here? I told this man to do something, you know. I said, sorry, he said, but there's no money for it. Well, this is the manager. I said, no, well, you buckle in, but, you know,
did you
the
have
point
to be,
was made.
Did you have to, did you have to be, you know, kind of hard-necked, tough?
Well, yes, yeah, you had to be tough. Yeah, yeah, you had to stand your ground. So you had.
To prove your point.
Aware. Yeah, but you didn't have to be nasty about it. You can be tough and nice about it, so you can, you know, and that's the way I was.
And there wasn't that much money, was there?
No, money was tight, and you know, it was all rates was coming in. Everyone was paying for it. Everyone was paying rates.
Yeah.
You know, so you were spending people's money. That's always something I always was aware of. You know, in when you're working with the local authority and the public service, you're spending somebody's money, and you have to account for it. And you can't throw it idly by, you know, it's not easy come, easy go. It's, you know, hard to get it. Somebody is tearing it. And you have to account for it at the end of the day. So there was two bank strikes away back in the 60s. And we had to do the reconciliations when all the banks were finished and things like that. And we balanced them all to a penny. Every penny that was taken in was accounted for. Every penny that was spent was accounted for. All had to be balanced. You know. Someone said nicely about money, you know, money, what is it? You know, money in, money out, you know, but it's not as simple as that. You have to account it for.
In those years, did you experience any wrongdoing? Like, you know, fellas that would take a backhander to get a job done or.
No, that wouldn't. You see, when you're in accounts, all you're doing is accounting for money to come in. You know, that would be sort of in the works department, and
not in that particular.
No, I am aware that there was one or two people, you know, in trouble. All right, alleged to be, you know, doing misdeeds or whatever else, but it didn't reflect on me or didn't come to me at all. You know, it was other things that was happening. You know, something else. More so, I suppose, you know, got some of that maybe in, when I went from finance, I went into housing for a year and a half. I wasn't long enough in it to make a real mark on it. I was in housing administration, there was Vista Cottages and maintenance and things like that. It was pretty simple.
Was there a bad need for housing in Dublin at that?
There was, yes.
In the late 60s.
The housing lists were, you know, way, way up, you know, and you weren't building that many houses. You know, and so there's always like funny instances. I remember when you're talking about housing, a funny instance, you know, and the staff officer, I was upstairs in Gardner Place at the time, and housing allocations was down on the ground floor. And the staff officer was there on housing allocations, and some chap came in with his kid, you know, and he was looking for a house, and he was banging the table, he was looking for a house. So he lost his temper. He wasn't getting much satisfaction anyway, so he shoved the kid into the hatch, and he said to the man inside, he said, "Now you can mind the kid, you know." And the man thought he was coming in after the kid as well, you know.
Go away.
So everyone upstairs to the top of the house, and I was summoned up to protect the senior staff officer, stand outside his door in case this little fellow was coming. And he was 5 foot nothing, you know. He was coming up the stairs. Oh, panic. So that was at the time. That's
people just desperately want a house,
and want repairs done and things like that, and that's all they wanted, just wanted their house, or had their own pride in themselves. But we didn't have the houses to allocate, so we didn't.
Now, were you involved in the planning of houses as well as in...
No, just purely maintenance.
Just maintenance
yeah,
in houses.
Yeah. Housing was divided in two areas. You had housing construction, which built all the houses and got the sites and everything like that. And housing maintenance then allocated the houses or reallocated vacancies and done repairs. And what was then, there was Vesta cottages. There were the old labourers' cottages that were built way back in the 1940s, were vested. And people were redeeming their annuities. They'd only pay £1 a year or something like that. And there was a calculation for redemption of their annuities. They were coming into a little bit of money at the time, you know. And they were redeeming and they were getting the freehold possession of their properties. So they were. So that was 1970s.
And there was no appreciation for those cottages at all, was there?
None in the world. No.
Just knocked them, get rid of them.
Some of them knocked and get rid of them. No, there were homes to people as well, you know. They just wanted to get their own, whatever it was, you know. Ownership, as you know, in Ireland, you know, everybody wants to own their house. Not like England or any of those places where you rent out or things like that, you know, and you don't own. But there's an inbuilt, whatever it is, in people to own their property. So it is, and those people had the few bob and would be able to redeem their annuity by paying £21 or £22, £23, £24. Well, it was big money, I suppose, then, but they were able to save their, whatever they got anyway, they were able to pay off their annuities and get the freehold possession of their properties.
How long did that last now?
I was only 18 months in housing.
But it gave you another bit of...
It gave me another bit of experience.
Experience in life. That's right.
And then I moved in 1977, I moved to planning department, which was in Dame Street at the time. And I was there from 1977 to 1991, when the reorganisation. And there was major changes then in the planning department. Dublin County started to develop. And you had the 1963 Planning Act, and then you had the 1976 Planning Act, which gave a lot more authority to the council. You had this thing, I was in enforcement at the time, so you had a High Court injunction procedure. And before that, to enforce anything about a housing estate or a builder or stop something at all, the provisions of the 1963 Act were very weak. Mm. But in the 76 Act, you had the High Court injunction came about. And I was in enforcement, and we used that. And I say we, there was a little team. I was in the enforcement department. Brian Nealon was in the law department. John Gallagher, who's, you know now, a senior counsel now, of fame with the Mahon Tribunal. He was only a junior, I recall, a barrister in the courts. He dealt with Tom Smith. He devilled to Tom Smith. Tom Smith was senior counsel at the time. So he was. And between that little group of people, all those problems we had with building and developers not finishing off estates and things like that, or doing something wrong.
Being in the enforcement department that you were in as staff officer, what was your brief?
My brief was anything that contravened the Planning Act. If there was contraventions of planning, people were building without planning, or people built estates or whatever it was without planning and weren't finishing them off, was to rectify that. Mm. Get them finished. That was...
How difficult was that? In your time, how difficult was your job?
Difficult? It was... I suppose it was more rewarding, but we put down one marker at the very beginning, and it's something I never forget. A developer started on a Friday evening out in Taney Road in Dundrum to start a building, to clean off a site, to develop a housing site. And in the middle of that development, there was a monkey puzzle tree. Big monkey puzzle tree, 30 foot. And those type of developers, they know. And we knew who we were dealing with and what their mentality was and things like that. Any fellow that moves into a site on a Friday evening is not going to do good. He's going to clean everything before you get in on Monday morning. And a tree in the ground on Monday morning is no good to you. You can do what you like about it, but it is down. So we knew what was going to happen. We surmised what was going to happen anyway. And so we started off that Friday evening. And there was a few of us involved in it. I was there. What's the man's name now? He's up in Fingal. I think we're in a minute. Brian Leland. But we went off that night and we got a High Court injunction to protect that monkey puzzle.
Did you?
Woke up Declan Costello at 3 o'clock in the morning. So we did to get a High Court injunction over in Declan Costello's house. Declan Costello was a High Court judge at the time. Alan Carty, Brian Neeland, John Gallagher, and myself get all the affidavits and everything ready. And we woke up Declan Costello at 3 o'clock on a Saturday morning. So we did, and we got a High Court injunction. We knew where the developer was and we got his address. So yes, I won't go too much into that part of it. But we got it anyway, and I served the injunction on him. So I did that night, and I was back the next morning at 7 o'clock to make sure that he adhered to it.
Well, and you really meant business, didn't you?
Absolutely.
And is it there to this day?
Pardon? I don't know. I never went back. I presume it is because there was an injunction on it. I never went back because it's down in the Dunleary Rathdown Council area now. But that put up, and the whole building industry sort of shook from that episode. That once we got after things after that, there was respect for us. And there was respect for all the councils. It was the first injunction, I think, that was obtained under the 1976 Planning Act.
Right. And you spearheaded that.
I spearheaded that. Yeah. You know.
And got it up and going.
And then put down a marker. So it did. To all the developers. After that, then, we finally developers to finish off estates and things like that. And all the developers that have been out there, we met them all, you know. And
That was a monkey puzzle tree down in Dundrum somewhere.
That's right.
But what about Northside Dublin? Were you involved in a lot of the lovely Georgian buildings that were, you know, they were taken down?
No, they were all in Gardner Place and Gardner. Yeah. No, we were outside the boundary. We were in County Dublin.
So that Woodkey wouldn't have been your responsibility at all?
No, wouldn't have been at all, yes. Yeah. That's all,
Did you meet up against any other problem like that where a preservation order had to be stuck on a house to preserve it against being knocked?
A preservation order.
Or was that something that ever came in? Was that there in your time?
They're sort of hitting me. Sure, we done preservation orders. Just can't recollect now. I remember there was another instance. It was not too far from Talla here. It was down below on the Dodder, on the banks of the Dodder there on Fearhouse Road, where there was a big cement works, and he was expanding to no end without planning permission, and he was claiming it was there. And again, we went on the High Court injunction route. And during the course of it, we were able to obtain aerial photographs taken back in 1964. So we were. And showed that it was only a small little slab in the ground, not the 15 or 20 acre slab that was down there at the time. So we got that closed down, you know, and got it brought back to, I think the council bought it afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, but we got the business closed down. And that were preservation orders. Just not coming to mind now.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah,
says when I sit into the car and I go home and I realise what you're asking me.
All right, but moving on from there. You know, we're sitting down here in the council office in Talla. We're looking out the window. And most of what you see are new buildings now.
There was nothing here. The first time I came to Talla, 1971, I remember coming out the Fearhouse Road, out to Bridgie Burke's pub, turning right there, and I came down the Old Barn Road, and McInerney's where we're looking for a house at the time. We were thinking of getting married. And it's going way back, it's 1967, 68. I met my good wife in 67, this would be 68, 69, in fact. And McInerney was building the flat roof houses on the Old Barn Road. And that's the only houses that were in Talla, bar the council estate that's over there, Mailruns Park.
In fact, Talla was all open ground.
Open country. Those was, this was all farmland that we were looking at here.
Imagine.
So it was, yes. Absolutely. And you drove in and you were in your Crumlin before you know, going in the other road, the Greenhills Road and things like that, yeah. All that was, we're out the country. There was a little pitch and putt place there beside Bridgie Burke's, played pitch and putt on it. There was someplace else, it was a pitch and putt course as well, you know. But there was nothing at all in Talla, only a little village out in the country, no more than Glasson is down in Westmead, you know, which is beside me. So it is Mount Temple, a few of those places. And that's all there was in there.
Well, do you feel in some way responsible for the development out along this way? You know, the way Dublin has spread out. And
responsible might be the wrong word.
Not responsible, but you've seen the growth.
I've been connected with it. Yeah. I've been connected with it. I've, you know, my own small way, which is probably a very small speck, or, you know, on it.
But you were a cog in the wheel.
I was a cog in the wheel that brought it out, yes, indeed, and have the orderly development that is there, because if people didn't adhere to the planning permissions they got and know that the enforcement powers were there, there would have been mayhem. They would have done it otherwise, you know.
Did you have a 20-year plan, or did you have any forward plan as to, you know, the development as it went along?
Well, the council had its plan, you know, it's the 5-year plan and the long-term plans and things like that, and the strategies that were there. But I'm a practical man, you see.
And talking about traffic now as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, well, even with traffic and things like that, and, you know, I'm practical. People have to live and people have to go and people have to work, you know. So get them there as easy as you can, you know. Don't be making decisions or anything else, you know, that people will be laughing at you. One of the things that you can see maybe is, and you go down the country and you see speed limits, or you see white lines along the road. I was coming up from Matlowan, from Clare yesterday, you know, and there's white lines along roads where one can safely overtake, you know. And if there's a tractor in the road there, and tractors now can do 30, 40 miles an hour, you know, so they can easily. So, but you're stuck in behind it, because otherwise you're really breaking the law by overtaking. And that's the practical things that I've had to say no to at times here, when I'd be looking at, you know, the recommendations from the engineers here when I was in roads department, you know, or even in planning department, when you're looking for a recommendation from the planning inspector, you know, someone will be gung-ho, go to court. No, don't go to court. Ring up your man. Get him in. He's a decent guy. He might know what he's doing. You get to know the clients. You get to know the fella that's trying to go through the wall with his head, and the fella that's, you know, genuinely, you know, you can help him along. And I met a lot of developers, and, you know, they come in and they talk to you and say, well, how can we get around this, or how can we get around that? And without, as I say, giving them formal advice or undermining the council or anything else, you know, give them a bit of guidance and bring them along, you know, with you.
Would you suggest that the councillors themselves are learning as they go along?
Absolutely, yeah. Most councillors are individuals, you know, and they know nothing at all. They get involved in the political system. And, you know, they start off with being involved in the community council. And then they'll graduate to that into a wider scale, you know. But with the Communities Council, they are sort of blinkered insofar as all they're looking for is something for their estate without looking at the wider picture, you know. But once you get them into the council, and 90% of the councillors that I have met, you know, will listen to you, and you'll be able to tell them, you can do this or you can do that, or don't go down that road. But I've met councillors as well, and I've said to them, you know, look, you're flogging a dead horse there. You're not going to get any joy out of that. You are going to be embarrassed at the end of the day by fighting for something that's not going to happen, you know. And they will still dive in and they'll keep shouting and roaring or whatever else, you know, putting the pressure on. But, you know, the law's out in the end, they say, and they... I don't want to see any member, I never wanted to see any member of the council embarrassed at all, you know, by something that, you know, because you want something, you know, You can't get yourself, you're going to go to your councillor. Now, maybe, you know, for the better good and the greater good.
But county councillors generally have a lot of power.
Oh, sure, they have power, yes.
And people give them that power.
Yes, they have a lot of power, you know.
Do you think that power is sometimes abused? Do you think that power is sometimes abused?
I wouldn't say the power is abused, but the respect that they want might be abused. I put it that way. Because power, one councillor on his own can do nothing. You know, and again, it's a council decision, you know, and you respect the council decision. But you can meet a councillor, you know, and I've met some of them and you daren't say no to them, you know. They wouldn't expect you to be saying no to them, you know. But you have to say no to them, you see. And so, as I said, that's where the respect parts with it, you know, that they could be abusing their status, you know, for some gain that they want. I don't, you know, but not for the greater good of the council, I'd be saying no. I'd say no.
Saying to me.
Yes.
Do you think that where did you go when you left when did you get into the traffic corps situation?
Well, I went into the traffic. Well, before then, sorry. I left planning in 1991 for the local government reorganisation. Local government reorganisation. There was a little team put together for the split up of Dublin County Council into Fingal, South Dublin, and Rathdown joined with Dunleary to form the Dunleary Rathdown part of it. So with the manager at the time was John Fitzgerald. So it was, but there was a team set up. Tom Doherty was the head of the team. Eamon Cunningham and Eugene Vesey was at the next level. And then we had Eamon Farley and there was a few other people involved in it.
Eamon being yourself, of course.
There was Eamon Farley was underneath us. He was another member of staff.
Yeah.
But we were given the task of splitting up Dublin County Council, as it was then, into Fingal, South Dublin, and, as I said, Rathdown joined with Dunleary. And then that was an enactment.
What year was this?
1991. So it was. And then we had to go through all the, you know, to get the percentages that was going to Fingal for money-wise and staff-wise and everything like that, one had to examine all aspects of the council.
And the restructuring of county councils in each place.
Yes, there was a new council created in Fingal. Yeah. Fingal Council was created. South Dublin Council, as we are here, it was created. And the Rathdown part of what was the Dublin County Council, which was from whatever it was, Edmundstown Road over to the Dunleary boundary, Dunleary Urban or whatever it was.
And you were set up
as its own, yes.
Yeah, you were set up as a task force to put all these into place.
Yes. Split the council and put those things in place.
Yeah. Take me through that. How difficult was that now? Or how easy was it?
Well, it was a job. So it was. it was a challenge. So it was. And we got it right. But one had to say what was the, you know, Fingal, you had a huge, big, vast area from the Liffey right up to the Mead boundary and into the city. So it was, you know. So you had to break down the different aspects of the council. We had to examine roads, housing, sanitary services, water, drainage, the libraries. Every aspect of the council you had to delve into to find out how much business was going on in each of the areas. And the rates that was coming in from each of the areas, every aspect of council life that was coming in from each of the areas. Eugene Vesey looked at all the legislation that needed to be enacted or put in place to make sure that once the council was set up, it had a legal foundation and a proper foundation for all its aspects. I've done the practical work of examining all the aspects of the council, the material aspects of the council, to get the split. How much of the finance should go to the Neary? What's the staff? You know, there was, whatever it was, 1,200 staff or thereabouts in the council at the time.
And you because know, you were pretty yeah. good on,
with figures and things like that,
no
yes,
problem
I had no yeah. problem at all in the world at all. And that's how I got to use learn how to use computers. Before that, I had no knowledge of computers at all. I kept them away from me. A computer in your hand was no good when you were meeting a developer. I was in planning then at the time, across the road, and you were telling them, across the table from you, and you're telling them, you can do this or you can't do this. And I had a lovely little plaque in my desk when I was in the planning days. And it read, it was a brass plaque, "Faults I may have, being wrong is not one of them."
So hey, you were telling
I was looking at looking at them when they came in. So a stranger came in, that's the first thing he saw on the desk. Bit of a joke around there.
Yeah, but so, yeah.
Setting up the new councils.
Yeah. Yeah, that was.
So was yeah.
What position did you take then? You came down here to South Dublin.
I was at grade sevens. I came into South Dublin. All staff then, well, that process had to go through. And during the process, we had to meet all the unions with all the grades and things like that, and had to hammer out deals with all the unions. So it was. Staff.
What was the transition? Was that transition over those few years? Was it easy? Did it fall into place easy enough?
It fell into place easy enough because in most departments, 95% of departments, staff sort of split. Some people wanted to go to Fingal. If you're living in Blanchardstown or coming in from the north side or whatever else, you went Fingal direction. Anyone that's living Lucan, Leixlip, West County came into South Dublin, you know, and then there was people that were living in Rathdown or wherever else and went that way. So in... you know, 99% or 95% of it anyway, there was no difficulty. And each office sort of split then itself. Each department split itself. So if everybody in one section of a department, you know, like the council is, if you have roads department, you have all different little sections of it. But you had somebody from each section working in, from each of the new council areas working in each section. So once it's split, you had an experience going with you. And that was the critical thing. And that's how it made it easy. That's how it made it easy at the end of the day.
Money was fairly, in 1991-ish, money was fairly okay, wasn't it?
Money, yeah, well.
It was easy to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, South Dublin was the richest of the local authorities, you know. So the government grant was come then. Probably Fingal got more off it because it needed more, you know, to sustain itself than South Dublin. And the Neary right down then was somewhat similar to South Dublin, you know. It had enough, but money is an issue. It's always is an issue, but. But the government grant that was coming, you know, the rate support grant at the time, you know,
Now, who was in power? At the time, it was Charlie Haughey, wasn't it?
Well, I was involved in every election and had done all the counts and everything else and every election, you know, who was in power.
Yeah. And so this is why did you work closely with the politicians?
No. It was enacted that Dublin County Council was going to be broken into three. Whatever happened beforehand or whatever it was, you know, local government reorganization, we worked closely with the officials in the Custom House. There was three, four or five officials there in the Custom House that were always kept abreast of it.
Why did you work closely with them?
Well, you see, like everything else, the council is the council, but the Custom House is the department of local government. You know, or Department of the Environment as it was then, you see. So you're answerable to them in the day. They're the ones to give you the money. They give you the sanctions for whatever sanction you're looking for. You know, you have to work with them to whatever new legislation was needed to give the new councils their footings. You know, like the health acts or whatever else. You know, there was a whole brief of acts there that had to be.
But you had far more implied now in the county councils. You had far more... departments in each county council.
Absolutely.
You had
the same in everything, but you had a new staff structure in everything. So that's where the staff negotiations came into it. And we spent many a night and a couple of nights and things like that. Nothing was given easy and all had to be hard won by the unions. And we had a couple of all-night sessions with them, and broke up and wouldn't say in rancor, but had to break up, had the breaks and things like that for the...
IT?
Yeah. The IR.
CIPTO. CIPTO, was it?
CIPTO, yeah. Yeah, well, see, no, Impact was for the general administration. CIPTO was for the professional people.
Right.
And the ITGW, well, they were some of the outdoor workers and things like that, but it didn't really affect the outdoor workers, and I'm not downgrading, but like Fingal, you had a depot in Blanchardstown, and you had a depot in up in Swords. So really, you only had to split part of Blanchardstown because it came down into Lucan. And things like that. There was a depot in Talla, so that was for all South Dublin, and there was a depot over in Sandyford, which was went with that there. So the outdoor working area sort of fitted in. There was some small change of boundaries or things like that, or some staff had to move. If somebody was living in Talla and working over in Sandyford, and now they got a chance to get back into the depot in Talla. Or the housing depot, or wherever it was down in Clondalkin.
How easy was it to work with the unions?
The unions. Let's say we'd have no rows as such, but it was hard fought. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well, because their demands were, They saw an opportunity to enhance their membership, the lot of their members. And all they wanted, primarily what they wanted, was promotion for their members. So the more grades that were created up the level, you created one up on top, that came right down through. A clerical officer at the end of the day was going to get a lift up to one grade. So the more they got along the line, and that's what the struggle was, how many senior staff officers, how many assistants, administrative officers, things like that, That's how they wanted. And they wanted a structure that, like the pyramid, rather than it being a narrow pyramid, they wanted a wide pyramid. So the more there was a H level, the more their members gained from it.
I understand. That's the way they wanted structure.
That's the way they wanted structure. We had our ideas of what the structure was to be.
Yeah.
But like haggling, does make a difference whether you're buying something, buying a calf below and a fair and at low, or haggling with the unions here. They have their position. And we have our position. Like I met a man today that was wanted to buy a bit of land. I'm involved with a football club out there in Kildare. We have sort of land there. We're after buying 12 acres. We don't want 3 of it. And he's interested in buying the 3. So I was talking to him today and I set out my stall. He's going to find out how it's his stall. And there's going to be a difference between us. So we just have to haggle.
We'll get to that before we finish because I'm dying to talk to you about that. But staying with the unions.
Yes.
But you never got to a situation where you were heading towards a strike or anything
that. Oh yes. There was strikes threatened. Yes. There was strikes threatened and there was intervention. The intervention had to come in the form of there was a rights commissioner, but there was a conciliator appointed.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Oh,
I know because you're dealing with people's lives. You're dealing with their wages and with their position.
That's one thing. You're dead right on what they're saying is you're dealing with individuals there as well, but you're also dealing with the public's money out there. And eventually, whatever is agreed has to be paid for, and you're dealing with public monies and structures that you can or cannot support. We can all be kings and have no Indians.
Right.
You know.
How seriously did you take your work?
Very seriously. Very seriously. Absolutely, yes.
And would you kind of leave mm-hmm. your office in the evening and go mm-hmm. home and still think about what happened during the day?
With reorg, it was a 24-hour, 7-day job.
Because you were at the top of the pinnacle now.
Yeah, it was a challenge, and you came in the next morning, you went home, and you came in the next morning, you know, but you had a rake of people, other people to meet, you know. Everyone was looking at, and everyone was wanting, you know. Yeah. And you didn't have that much time in your side. You just had to, you had a certain amount of time.
How long did you stay in your job? How long were you in the county council?
Altogether? I was 41 years. I retired in 1st of July last year, 07.
You were working up to last year.
Oh, that's right, yes. Good. Yeah.
And so you saw South Dublin grow from like you said, fields to
absolutely.
What it is today.
Fields to what it is today, yes. That's right, yes.
And your input into that would have been, watching the development of the roads and the house planning and that.
At the end of the day, that's in the last number of years, you know, after reorg, there was a few other things in. I was in HR for a while.
And then what's HR now?
Human resources, yeah. Yes. That's right, yeah. I introduced the bin collections, you know, that was there.
Did you bring that in?
Before the bags. Yeah, before that there was the bag collections, you know, but we introduced the wheelie bins. I was involved in that.
Was that your idea?
Negotiations. Pardon? Well, I wouldn't get claim to it, but it was something we got stuck into when I was in HR and got it.
Did you?
We looked at...
Well, where did you look abroad for
those
ideas?
We went over in England, yeah. Went over to England and had to look around, you know, and see how clean, how tidy it was. And it was... two men in a lorry and, you know, where there was five men in a lorry and going home at 11 o'clock, you know, start at 7 and gone at 11 or maybe earlier, you know, and some of the routes, it was completely unviable. So went over to England and we had a look, saw what it was, and then we got, again, with the engineers, we got all our plans together and made sure we had everything. Anyone ask any question, you have to have an answer.
From the days you told me where there was absolutely mm-hmm. no waste at home in your own house to a consumer race now,
yes,
that we're living
that's
in.
That's right, Jess.
So you went the full scale.
That's right, Jess. Everything else, all the packaging and everything else that went with it and all the litter that was around the place. And then there was nothing to stop you. You bought a bar of chocolate, whatever it was, and you were driving along, you let down the window of the car and you just flicked it out. You flicked out your cigarettes and your box of matches and everything else was thrown out the window and it was all there. Until the plastic thing came along and then it was all over the place. You know, before then, like I said, when I was young and things like that, it was a paper bag. Brown paper bag, whatever. You went to a shop and it was a paper bag or you had a bag or whatever it is and grocer put everything into a bag. And it deteriorated with the weather and things like that. But then plastic came along. As I was sitting here looking at it, you can see it beyond there in the tree in front of me.
What do you think now when you look back at this and you see Tala the way it is today? And are you pleased the way that things have turned out?
I'm proud to be part of it. I am proud to be part of it. I have given a little, you know, so it has. Not alone have I given a little, but I always encourage my staff, you know, to look ahead and look at the wider picture and give them a sense of responsibility or ownership of what they were doing. This is not Eamon Cunningham at all. Eamon Cunningham, at the end of the day, was a guidance. Eamon Cunningham didn't sit in an office. He had an office, but that doesn't say he sat in it. He went around and he talked to be the clerical officer or whoever it was, the engineer or whoever it was. You know,
being senior executive officer and facing retirement, I suppose, last year, you reached the stage that you really wanted to reach from the very beginning.
Well, yes, I had 41 year service. You can retire a 40 year service. So I had 41 year service. I was over 60, I was 61 year of age, and I had good health, thanks be to God. And your health is your wealth.
Okay. Now, finally, let me talk to you
Sure,
about
sure.
your involvement now with the Gaelic
I'm
with the
involved
Gaelic
with,
Football Club,
yes,
is
I'm
it?
involved with the Gaelic Football Club. Well, I've been involved with that for some time, but
Where?
I was in a place called Rathcoffey in County Kildare. Small little club. It's part of the parish of Clane, if you when parish wise, Rathcoffey. It's on between Maynooth and Clane, Selrish, Kilcock. It's in the middle of that sort of quarter quadrangle, so it has. I was living out there, and the kids went to school out there. And from an early age, I just got involved to make sure that there was something there for the kids.
And you spent your
And there's
life
a
commuting in and out from
absolutely, yeah. From well,
from
from Leixlip, first of all, for 4 years, and then we moved out there. In 1976, I think I moved out to Rathcoffey,
And before
and
I
there
leave,
since, yeah.
before I leave it go, the
Yeah.
traffic situation. I mean, surely you must have sat in the car and in traffic jams and thought to yourself, "Well, I'm
Well,
responsible for this."
no, I put it this way. I don't like sitting in traffic jams. So I'll drive an extra mile to avoid it. So one would say you're coming in from Maynooth to Talla. You should come in as far as Lucan and come down, whatever, one of the roads or something like that, or come in as far as the M50. No, when I'm coming from here to home, or when I'm going from whatever way, I'll now go out by Fortinstown, down as far as Rathcoole, or maybe down as far as Kill, in through Strachan and out. I always sort of go around. I'll do an extra mile rather than sit in traffic.
Yeah.
But I do have respect for the people that are sitting in traffic. But in today, one would ask the question, is there need for everyone to be sitting in traffic? Because 99% of traffic is a driver-only car. And there is other means, but the country is, we are rich, we're rich in people, and people like to be able to go where they want, when they want.
But when you were planning the traffic situation, when you were looking at the roads and that, did you have
Yeah.
any idea that we'd ever reach the stage with
No.
all the traffic on the roads?
One could never foresee. In the 50s, one could
But could
never
you not see
foresee
the
what
way
was
Europe
this.
was going and the way
Pardon?
America and all the other countries, that were slightly ahead of us with their traffic?
Yeah. I always remember listening to the radio, the English radio, and on the M1 in England, whatever it was, there was a mile tailback or something like that, traffic going into London. But you never envisaged that happening to Ireland. You didn't foresee the prosperity that was coming to the place. And it came, and we're not ready for it. We're still not ready for it. One can maybe say that there's a certain part of officialdom in the civil service that looks after today, and tomorrow can look after itself. And nothing more than you can go down now from here to, as I said, I was down in Limerick yesterday, or down near Limerick yesterday, and the road down there's a new road, the Nenagh Bypass. It's only open, what, 4 or 5 years, and they're now widening it. And that's nonsense. But that's officialdom for you. You just look after today, and somebody else looks after tomorrow. They
Yeah.
keep their slate clean. I don't know whether they're working. No, nobody knows who they are, but they're not in
Well,
the real world, and that's something that I always sort of try to live in.
Eamon
Yeah.
Cunningham, you looked after yesterday and tomorrow and today is as you would say, looking after itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. It's
Thank
been a
you.
pleasure.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
very much.